Hey, DC fans, it's Gary from Burton's Comics. I just want to let you know that Burton's Comics is open and ready to serve you in Hamilton, Ontario, down 725 Barton Street East. Come in for some deals on the weekend. Thanks.
Yo.
What up?
It's Wednesday, dude.
It's Wednesday, my dude. Ow!
And we're putting out an extra special episode. You know why?
Why is that? What's going on? What's so special? Tell everybody why it's so special.
Well, we had to get the hype train going because this weekend is the one-year anniversary of the DC Animated Review with the creature features that love their features.
The feature creatures that are about the features in which is featured by DC Comics, the likes in which is brought to news, reviews, and all manner of points of views, askew. All that manner and so forth, other rhyming and doodads and whatnot, and it is the birthplace of me reminding everybody why there's only one actual successful Robin out there, the most powerful Robin, of course. You'll hear more about that on the upcoming episode after this one, which is just a little bit of a pit stop right along the way. He's up there with Jarl, but right now he's got his own thing going on, and that puts him ahead of the game. So we'll see if we can't see like something, you know, Jarl related or one shot or a limited series in the future. Yeah, something like that could go. It'd be a really nice thing to tackle, honestly, outside of like just mainstream continuity and just that weird humor added.
Well, before we get too into things, of course, we are your hosts with the most, keeping it down like buttered toast. I am Courage Pro Wrestling's two-time commentator of the year, Clowny J. In the other room, putting leftovers away from tonight's dinner, she's gluten-free and kind of sleepy. She's the sick little one. And a little cold as well. And yourself, good sir.
Well, of course, everybody knows me and the Fluffluff, I guess, the Fright Furball himself. I am technically a wizard because I put Coke Zero in the Diet Pepsi bottle. There's not a damn thing anyone can do about it. I am, of course, the Mayas. What up?
Well, you know, since we're doing this midweek, we don't have as much on the plate. Of course, you haven't been to Gary's yet for the Wednesday releases, although I did get a book in the mail for what we're reading.
This week around, I didn't go into Gary's yet. No, I'm thinking that's going to be like an end of the week thing. So that way on my way back, just to make sure I got everything set ready to go. I got some good reads into me. You know, I've been given a lot of decent reads over the last little bit. You know, the same things that I was reading along then, still reading into now, and come across some very, very interesting rebirths, as it were, because just going off into the Marvel thing there, they did their Heroes Reborn thing, and I thought that was just going to be something silly, and oh my god, man, the Squadron Supreme is just the fucking Justice League. I shit you not. Like, hands down, villains cross over with other villains for power-ups, and then fucking the Squadron Supreme is the fucking Justice League. It's amazing.
Well, on one of the covers, it looks like they're rebooting Alpha Flight.
Yeah, they did. Oh, it looked really good.
Has that one already came out?
I'm believing it's still coming out this month, so if it hasn't come out this week, then probably a week later, but either way, it's one of the exciting new titles out there. Everything from Squatch's new look to why Wolverine has fucking weird sticks coming out of him.
Well, if you find a copy of that Alpha Flight magazine or book on the shelf, grab me a copy of it.
Yeah, I could do that.
But as for what I'm reading, my copy of Earth Justice League of America, Earth 2, the Grant Morrison book from 2000, the same one that they based Crisis on Two Earths for.
Okay.
That came in, and, you know, excellent read. There are some big shockers that, because this is like the main reintroduction of the Crime Syndicate after their 1964 debut.
They've just been having remarkable luck with Rebirth, these guys. All thanks to Owlman, pretty much. You know, I think he's pretty much at that one. Ultraman, Owlman and Power Ring are the key most important people of the fucking crime syndicate, as at least as of the last like decade. They've been doing like a lot of shit revolving around those characters mainly. A little bit of an honorable mention goes out to Grit, of course, under the Forever Evil arc. But aside from that, yeah, these guys have like the most to tell in regards to story and overall just goal accomplishments, really.
And what's really fun to think about is if you think about the Earth 2 movie, we had the Hal Jordan version of Power Ring, the same one that we saw in the books. We've also seen in the newer book, we've seen the John Stewart version of Power Ring. And in this JLA Earth 2, we see the Kyle Rayner Power Ring. So the only one we haven't seen really for the core four is Guy Gardner.
Wouldn't that be something, eh? What do you think he would be like as a Power Ring?
I think he's a shaman monk.
Like very peace of mind, no need for vulgarity or aggression.
Yeah.
I could see that happen. That's he's a shaman.
If anything, he would one day be selected for like a Lantern of Hope, but
oh fuck. Yeah, there's a couple different ways you could go with Gardner as the new Power Ring. And the Way of Hope, being a monk, you could include the likes of Nanda Parbat in there and really go to town on a story arc. You could even have like a buddy cop relationship between like Guy Gardner and Deadman.
There are some twists in this book that I did not remember from the first time I read it. It has been quite some time.
Oh, yeah.
Such as they imply that Ultraman was Hank Henshaw.
Wouldn't that be the coolest day?
He was an astronaut that went up to space, and when he came back, he had these powers. Oh no. Mize vanished.
You killed the mize.
Shit. Bad with power and shit. That'd be wild.
Also in the book they reveal that Thomas Wayne Sr. is the commissioner of Gotham.
I think that's like the second time around to commissioner.
And of course they did confirm that Lois Lane was Superwoman and Jimmy Olsen was basically her little sex slave.
Pretty interesting revelation regarding Superwoman in regards to recent reads at the very least. Very off-putting at first, but you kind of really learn to like just, you know, go with the flow with it. She just molds right into the Superwoman promise. The conflict that they face currently in the Crime Syndicate book is just so much fun to read so far.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to picking up, getting those next books in the mail from you. I've got a day in mind to send the next shipment. I will let you know off the air.
Oh, that's cool, man. Yeah, no worries. That's pretty much everything that I can probably give it all just one heave, and then it'll probably be good to go.
There's a few coming out between now and the end of the month, and I figure the first day of next month is on a Tuesday, so might as well wait to grab that Wednesday's books as well.
All right.
So we'll do like the first Friday of the month.
Plus we only have like 3 books, so there's no
point. Yeah, there wasn't many pulled at the time, so.
No, and remember, I got a couple of your books already, and then for the other titles that are in there, the couple will pile up. It'll still be like a pretty good count for by the time it comes
out. Oh, yeah. Dying in the background again. We did the mid-sesh strain switch.
Oh.
So we went from our discount stuff that we pick up every now and then to I busted up our last nug of zombie because of what WWE did on the weekend. I thought it would be funny. What? Did I kill you, Mize?
Yep.
Again, we have dropped the connection with Mize, it sounds like. I don't know if he can hear me.
No, it was my end. Sorry, my phone tried to connect to like a different Wi-Fi network on its own, and when it did that, it completely like started messing around with the regular connection.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Got that nice new flavor in the mouth, you know?
Oh, definitely. I was just about to go on about the zombie thing, right? Been everybody's cup of tea, but the way they did it overall, like the effort and appearance was absolutely great. The mannerisms walking about was fantastic, but you know, just dogpiling the Miz and laying on top of him or just looking at him is just kind of dumb. You're fucking zombies, you know, move the arms around a little bit or start dragging him down to under the ring or over the barricade like they did with John Morrison.
Well, apparently he tweaked out his knee. Miz is going to be out for 7 to 9 months.
Now, you see, there would be a good reason to just kind of get him around there, right? And just move him safely somewhere, just still motion over him. That way, at the very least, it's still animated. That way, we're still being sold on it. Like, I can understand if he's injured and he can't move. But, you know, something's got to be put in there. Show must go on and everything like that, you know.
And to the people that just want to complain, it was zombies in my wrestling. This is the same company that had the Boogeyman. Get over it.
Yeah, but hey, tell me more about how The Undertaker's your favorite wrestler, right?
The undead wizard zombie. See, that's the problem. These zombies didn't have superpowers.
One was Scotty Too Hotty. That's all we need.
Turn it up.
Yeah, exactly that. He was banging it. He killed it. Scotty Too Hotty made an okay zombie. I was just not a fan of how they tried just, you know, stuffing WWE footage into an Army of the Dead commercial, whereas they could have actually done something more relative to the narrative. But it's still cool that they were included and they did what they did. I just didn't like how they opened up with it. That first impression was really just aside from that, it just made everything else feel corny and off from that point.
Well, speaking of things that seem corny and off, we got a couple of pieces of news here. We'll start with, you know.
Can you read it?
I actually.
Can you read it, actually?
I can read your writing today.
All right.
The first one is, you know, we've been kicked in the balls twice by The Flash. It looks like they want to do it one more time because it looks like Danielle Panabaker might be leaving as well.
So it's really, really upsetting that, you know, Jay was literally right the entire time about who the villain was for. Terrible fucking villain. And we're losing key people we have come to like enjoy like most of the time and shit.
The core members of Team Flash of Wells, Cisco, and Caitlin will all be gone.
We could do the Vi brand all over again, but you know, you guys also being fans of CW productions like that, or you know, just overall good superhero TV shows. I hate to see like these people leave. You come to love a character nobody's loved in God knows how many years. You've taken a character you've just done a complete 180 with and turned it into a live action series. And I thought that was badass. You still continued on with one of the most memorable characters of the entire show. And I don't know what's going on there, but I really don't want to see these people go. I really don't want to see the fucking YouTuber scientists like take over the show.
Oh, if Chester's on it, I'm done. If Chester's on it after
becomes the new season regular.
Yeah, I'm done.
Well, speaking of being done with the show, did you watch what was technically tonight's episode, Mize?
No, I didn't watch that episode yet. The last episode I watched, I'm like, this is an absolute fucking kick in the balls for fans of the recent Force story. I've been loving where they've been going with it, but having the villain be one of the forces that are trying to be taken to begin with, like if any of you have read the recent Justice League run, like before Doom War and shit, and then there was the Flash books that had the various forces of it, they've all been introduced with the all manner of tomfoolery to go along with it, great stories. And the TV series had great creative twists in regards to what they wanted from it. But, you know, I want to see an actual, like, big villain try to take these forces. Who knows? That could have even given us an episode where Gorilla Grodd, like, turns Count Vertigo into a fucking baby and puts the still force inside of him and controls the mind of the baby. I don't know why that's so goddamn complicated, but it was fun as hell to read, so it'd definitely be fun. A telepathically controlled baby with superpowers. That is just monstrous. Absolutely monstrous.
being controlled by a gorilla.
Absolutely. And it was like the team that represented the goddess of like just overall existence and its destruction if it's not fitting to her appeal. And she felt that way. And it was just a huge thing throughout death metal. And it wound up being a fun read in the end because it wound up making sense. But it took a while to really just kind of grasp hold on what difference this rendition of a world-ending monster is to the other ones. But in which case can still be televised and not, you know, completely forgotten about there. I mean, look what we did with What's-His-Face. Oh, Jesus. The Gooey Fella.
The Gooey
Fella. Criminy. I'm not sure why I'm completely blanking out on his name. I'll definitely look it up after. It's Bloodwork. Excuse me.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, guys. I fucking flaked on that. They did it with Bloodwork, and it was fucking incredible.
Dr. Suresh from Heroes.
Yeah, exactly that.
All right, well, let's move along a little bit. We'll stay within the Flash family for news here because Tom Cavanaugh will actually be directing the season one finale of Superman and Lois.
Shut up. Really?
Yeah.
That's so pimp. I'm absolutely down with that.
I missed this show so much. I really enjoyed tonight's return. Really powerful, emotional story arc and the parallels and dichotomy between Jordan and Clark's story in this is picture perfect for this week.
Well, that's absolutely fantastic. I haven't gotten into watching it yet. I got to use online methods to be able to see it. So it's actually what I'm probably going to be doing right after this. Either that or I'll save it for like a morning thing for when I have coffee and it'll be like, oh yeah, super eyebrow minds. And then I'll be able to watch it with full power.
Well, speaking of full power, DC's Doom Patrol Season 3 does have an HBO Max return date, and that'll be coming back September 23rd.
That's fantastic.
So if you're not caught up on Doom Patrol, you have until September 23rd to do so.
And there's absolutely no reason not to be able to utilize that time frame for a show anyone hasn't seen, or at the very least caught up on, to be able to, you know, make that time frame, right? So.
Or even for a good old rewatch of both seasons, because the show is fantastic.
It's the open season with these old seasons until the new season comes out after the old season. It's all about the season, the season's greeting.
Well, someone who won't be getting the season's greetings will be Mark Strong, as he is not returning for Shazam Fury of the Gods. So Dr. Savannah will not be back in this film.
Good.
Which does lead more speculation to, is Mr. Mind going to be the villain? They did tease him in the post-credit scene.
Honestly, for a villain or sub-villain, I would want them to use Lobo.
That kind of casting would have came out by now.
That makes absolute sense. If wishful thinking, more or less.
See, I still see it as Mr. Mind is going to try to manipulate someone into stealing the powers of one of the Shazam kids. I believe this is where Sinbad is going to play in, because they did announce he's going to be in the film. They have the little girl that plays Darla announce that. I believe he is playing Uncle Dudley.
He is playing Uncle
Dudley. That hasn't been confirmed yet.
I thought it was.
Oh, shit.
Darla's full name is Darla Dudley. I think he's going to be playing her biological uncle being manipulated by Mr. Mind to try to steal the powers. And so I can't confirm any of that. That's just my speculation.
You're forgetting about her native translation. It is Darla Dudley the Dragon.
Dudley the Dragon, really?
Shout out to Channel 2 TVO.
Yo. Dropping that good shit. Oh, fuck, after this is Magic School Bus for Power Rangers, but I'm going to prep up with a bowl of cereal and my eyes are at the TV, so I'm going to watch them Dudley to stretch my shit before I watch the good cartoon. Yeah.
You know, at least you didn't make a Eureka's Castle reference.
Thank goodness. Good Lord. We walked into an awful lot throughout the last Scooby-Doo outlets, and I'd be pretty shameful if it happened so again during this one, which probably would. I've seen a lot of moments in this movie that I really just, oh man, like, again, my ass hurt. My ass hurt.
Yeah, so what do you say we go over our quick programming note for the next couple of weeks, then we'll do our Batman sound effect.
Yeah, that about wraps everything up for like news-wise, and we can get into part two of this. So yeah, let's go home on it.
Perfect. So of course, this upcoming weekend, the one-year anniversary show, we are doing the classic Batman Beyond: Return of the Joker.
Is my goddamn favorite of the entirety of like the DC animated universe. It is like uber meta in regards to DC animated features. Tells a great story back when an animated feature consisted of altered vocabulary than sometimes appearing now. And, you know, that classic Dini part art style.
On that show as well, we are looking for people to call in, hit that link on our anchor page and leave a message. Anything you want DC Comics related, you want to shout out your own podcast, your own videos, anything you want, you leave us a quick message and get yourself on the air. We will make sure you get that shout out.
Absolutely. If we you have like a favorite amongst the DC animated features we did for this season, feel free to let us know what those are as well. Hit us up on the socials, you know. We'll hit you up with those a little later on in case you already follow us. And from there until next week, you can just let us know what your favorite, like the best of the best of these movies have been.
I mean, that's right. What's been your favorite episode? Do you think Shauna should shut up and Mize should talk more?
Absolutely. I have a feeling that it needs twice the amount of Mize talk.
Shauna's dying in the corner right now. She can't concentrate on her knitting. Sorry, crocheting.
It makes understandable. She can't do the needle hijinks because my voice is just so hypnotic. I mean, I like hearing myself talk and all, but I know each and every one of you do. So make sure that you tune in next week for Return of the Joker. Because, you know,
and the week after that, we will be doing our last of the superhero girl films with Intergalactic Games.
I mean, awesome.
But hey, the week after that, we will be doing Lego Batman.
Now that's going to be a huge one to step into. I love the movie. I love to watch it on the pastime and being able to review it, just going over some of the hilarious dialogue and the writing for characters' interactions. This is nothing short of constantly hilarious all the time. I mean, even Zach Galifianakis came forward as a pretty good Joker. I'll give him that for certain. And the Killer Croc bit, just fucking chef's kiss on that shit.
And that'll bring us into our new season, the All Lego season. We are going to be going over quite a few of the DC Lego short films, and we're going to do each and every one of them.
Absolutely. So don't forget to build me up, Buttercup, when you get to that next season of all of that Lego goodness. Piece by piece, we're going to tackle all of the hilarious references and the details of these movies coming up.
Yeah, I've watched a couple of them myself just for fun, and I enjoy the Lego films. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they all stack up and what kind of continuity order they may have.
Absolutely. Yeah, and just before we finish up as well, I've been really goddamn excited about this. It's another part of like DC's meta history. It has come out on YouTube just recently, and it is the trailer for part two of The Long Halloween already. I cannot wait for this. Every scene that they put in there, every bit of dialogue that we heard coming from each character is word for goddamn word out of the book. And I am so goddamn excited. I did a cartwheel so hard, I fell into another dimension. Elbow dropped a giant fungi. And he was like, what the hell, man? I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry, dude. Long Halloween part two's come out. And then he lifted me up in a brain buster and then dropped me down on my neck. And he's like, it's already out here. And then he gave me like this ultra Shinku, like Shinryuken uppercut. And then I fell back into this dimension. That's how exciting this shit is.
Now, with all that excitement in mind, if you could greenlight any couple of books to become a movie next, what books do you pick?
Oh. Well,
I've got a simple one in mind. Like, you use that animation style, those voice actors, and you give me Batman Cacophony and the Widening Gyre.
Those are fantastic choices. Fantastic choices. If I had to choose various Batman arcs, I would probably have to say Dark Victory and Batman Rest in Peace.
Ooh. Shauna, do you have...
No, because everything I can think of has already been...
done in some form or the other?
Yeah.
Right away, you were going to say, like, the Court of Owls story or something?
Pretty much. Oh.
Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo's run on Batman, starting from the Court of Owls book, has been nothing short of, like, a fine melody all the way through. Like, somebody took a notebook, a sketchbook, a pen, and a pencil, and they just wrote a melody with it. It's amazing.
Yeah, you could even tackle, like, the Snyder-Capullo year one Batman story arc. Like, the Zero Year.
I love the Zero Year. That is a bat, you know, above all the Batman arcs, that one would probably be the most simple to tell. Oh my god, aside from War of Jokes and Riddles.
Holy shit.
That one. That is what we need. We've gotten movies with the Joker multitudes of times. We've hardly see any cinematic rendition of the Riddler. But it would be a great aspect to see both of those two at their grittiest and best going at each other and utilizing multiple characters throughout the DC universe to throw in between them. It could be a creative mix-up, or it could be ones that came directly from the comics, and same with the influence overall. But it's still just a story that you would see as having to be told on screen, of course.
I will see you that film and raise you the mini bonus feature film to be The Many Deaths of Vic Sage.
Still throw those in, of course. I mean, wouldn't it be awesome? Wouldn't it be awesome if you got like Gotham Knight, like you got how we got Animatrix, but all of the adventures were related to the question? And then you could still call it The Many Deaths of Vic Sage.
And have the whole thing end with it's Renee Montoya telling the story, it's not even Vic.
There you have it. Easy.
We're just giving you money here, DC.
I fucking love the idea of that. And they can't say the question wouldn't sell. I mean, they wouldn't have dropped him like they did in Justice League Unlimited if they didn't think he could sell.
Sean is in the process of crocheting me a little question doll.
That's understandable. It's the right thing to do. You've done well.
So with that, what do you say we take a breather? I'll grab something to drink, and then we will talk about Batman and Scooby-Doo meets Batman, episode 2, Electric Boogaloo.
With the likes of Fred, Idiot, Velma, Shaggy, and Scooby.
And him from the Powerpuff Girls painted like a circus clown.
What up? Back at it. Of course, coming at you. Post the news, into reviews. And of course, we're doing a Scooby-Doo meets Batman and Robin part 2. That's how they listed it on the episode, was Batman and Robin. But okay, whatever the case may be, you know, it has the normal Scooby-Doo like end credits and transition into like the newer one, and you know, even the whole like show tune and every jazz. And it's just basically another Scooby-Doo episode. Pretty cool. So
yeah, it starts off as a Scooby-Doo episode with the gang driving down the road. You know, they hit a little bump ski, which knocks out their light.
Yeah, you would have thought it was a flat or something, but, you know, that's just completely out of the blue. That was pretty nifty. They were headed off to some annual mystery solvers convention. So they're figuring out all the light shit, and all of a sudden this plane just, like, low flies right over them, right? It lands nearby and shit, but it spooks Shaggy and Scooby into hiding under the van. And the gang are like, yo, what the hell is going on here? And when they checked out the plane there, they saw just two guys lugging a big crate with a Jeep, and they were taken off in the middle of the night. Like, that is some manner of Yeah, that is some manner of Amazon delivery.
That's straight up an international Coke deal, straight out of like Medellin or Narcos or, I don't know, fucking Archer.
Yeah, they're definitely not sending over fucking turtleneck fun bucks. So they're taking off there, and of course the gang figures that they got a new mystery on their hands. And they decide to keep to the trees and shit and keep going forward.
Yo, and so, I wrote, they investigate this mystery. The only thing that they'll be solving is which pieces connect to which child, because they're going to get chopped up.
Oh, definitely. Like, there is no reason whatsoever five teenagers should be investigating this kind of meta shit out in the fucking middle of nowhere. It's completely unheard of, and it'd be completely stupid to do, but whatever, they're mystery solvers, so I guess they're exempt from danger, right?
Well, yeah, especially when they find just the lone creepy house out near the airstrip.
Yeah, just this random old farmhouse just kicking about there, and they're like, okay, dudes are there, and we should go check shit out, you know? So they're heading up on the place, and you know, one of the dudes takes off, and shortly after, you know, they listen to the sound of a plane flying by as well. Excuse me, that was, yeah, just them, I guess, going their separate ways. I don't know why they'd have to go their separate ways. They could have just, like, hey, man, you mind giving me a lift to the next town instead of making them drive all the way?
Well, one had to get back to the supplier, and one had to let the boss know the drop had been made. There's no cell phones back then, sir.
He could have given him a lift.
They're going in opposite directions.
Ah, well, see, that's no good. There's already a good one in the next town that way anyway. Fucking kids in there.
Well, the suicidal kids and their dog with no objection, they go into the house and realize that all of the furniture is like nailed and glued to the floor. Except for the rug that we soon discover.
Along with just a wooden crate that's sitting in the middle of the floor. It's just strapped. Well, I guess it's strapped down to the floor as well, so that way it wouldn't undergo that shit going the way it does. So in which case, just kind of realizing this, they get like a funny little bit there where they hear somebody coming along, Shaggy and Scooby do their Shaggy and Scooby bit, and eventually just hide with their face down, ass up, kind of shit. And it's Batman and Robin, you know? I thought it could have been like the fucking killers or the people coming along to fucking harvest their organs and shit, and they struck out, you know? Because they were exempt like that.
Yeah, and then they realize that there is someone upstairs, but it's just an old lady.
Yeah, this old lady turns out to be Mrs. Baker, part of the resident, yeah. And she didn't hear absolutely fuck all when she was asked about that kind of thing. She's also not, I don't know if she's really that curious or worried as to why find random teenagers, a near human intelligent dog, and the dynamic duo from Gotham City are just standing in her living room. So they question her about the crate and everything like that. She doesn't know what's up. So instead of like doing what they should have done and just opened it and checked it there, God, where do we go from there?
No, she does say she knows nothing, and that is when they crack it open, and it's one of them punchy clowns.
Oh, they did do that there. Okay. I thought for some reason I was a little behind. Oh, that's because my note for it was off the side. Yes. That's fucking how I roll. So, yeah, Baker doesn't know shit. They pop it open, and it's just an innocent fucking toy, you know, one of those knock-around clowns. They have one in fucking Secret of the Ooze as well, if you like Ninja Turtles. So, they're having a little funny Scoob moment, you know, kind of knocking it around from there. And eventually it knocks into Scooby, and Scooby gives it an extra hard whap, and the fucking head breaks off. And what's inside of it is dollar bills. Many, many dollar bills.
But they ain't real dollar bills, sir. Them's fakes.
Thanks to Batman's deductive powers, he was able to realize the one flaw in the dollar bills that were being handled in the crate. Abe Lincoln never wore a turtleneck. Dun, dun, dun. In which case now I call this currency the turtleneck fun bucks.
I can accept that.
Makes absolute sense. It's almost like the bison dollars in the Street Fighter movie from the early 90s.
I can't accept that.
It makes sense that you can't accept that movie. I mean, it was just absolute tomfoolery, and it was so corn dog. It was fucking just
the messed only up. Thing I can accept about that movie is just Raul Julia.
Yeah. All right. I can get on board with that.
Well, of course, the old lady still knows sweet dick all about this counterfeit money that's strapped to her floor.
Yeah, that's. I don't know how it is that she was unable to hear that kind of thing. I mean, even if she is elderly, like.
There was two people that came in and dropped off the crate and left.
Yeah, she does mention that she heard two people come into her house. She went upstairs and then they left.
Else going on? See, that's all messed up. We should have questioned it from there.
They brought in the crate, but she had no idea how they got it there.
Just amazing. Oh my god.
Yeah, they then decide to go to the automobile graveyard, as they call it.
Oh my god, yeah, because there was a nearby place that they would stash a car or shit like that, you know? And what better place than to do it there? Even if they're going to destroy the Batmobile anyway, then, you know, they could do it there. Whether it's a fucking showdown, they could do it there. It's always one of those, like, generic, like, 70s to 90s locations where you'd expect to have a boss fight.
And then Robin gets the bright idea to use his light at the top of the crane to illuminate the place.
Absolutely. Everybody's all looking around.
Yes, dear.
You don't have to explain every joke you tell me. I get it. Just because I didn't laugh.
Well, Mize didn't laugh either. Maybe he didn't get it. I said bright idea, and Robin was using a light bulb to shine light on things.
Yeah, I know. You just explained it to her. I go what's going on.
Mize, thank you.
But, you know, in case you didn't get it, like, Robin's up there, you know, he's putting the light up and the light illuminates the place. So that's where the joke's actually funny.
Wait, a light bulb?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I still don't get it, man.
I'll explain it to you later.
Mystery is a marvel.
Well, they do see a hooded figure running around, and it's obviously Mrs. Baker just with her hood up.
Yeah, the entire time. If you could...
Come on, yeah,
they automatically start assuming, hey, we have to get that man.
That's just absolute bullshit, because Mrs. Baker is the only one in the movie wearing that style of clothing and that color scheme.
Yeah, it's just her hood up, and Batman automatically assumes it's a man.
Everybody assumes it's a dude because she runs like an Olympic fucking competitor. Like, if she has some fucking legs to her, you know? She can really go the distance for such an old lady.
And she must have, like, parkoured her way up the crane to get into the operating room because she got there quickly and, you know, Fred happened to notice this. So he himself gets up there quick. And if you notice, he puts her in a goddamn sleeper hold and just brings her down.
Yo, Fred doing Robin's job was just the funniest shit ever. Robin's just chilling up there. He's like, oh, fuck, something's going on down there. Oh, geez. One of the kids is actually doing what I... Oh, Batman sees this could be out of a job. And then he thinks he'll offer it on to Freddy.
Isn't that the same time as he flips her out of the ring and her or out of the thing? And her, like, legs are up by his face.
Yeah, yeah. Fred and the old lady getting, like, a wrestling match here.
So, aside from that part, Shaggy and Scooby, when they saw her, all they did was fucking run and jump into a jalopy. They didn't think to scream out for anyone's help. because Batman isn't a fucking superhero or anything. So you completely miss out on being able to catch her when she's so goddamn close, enough for Batman and Robin to be able to get her from wherever they're positioned at and, you know, completely end their trouble there. But no, they don't. It's fucking into the jalopy they go. All that wrestling around was from her putting Shaggy and Scooby in the jalopy into the compactor. Robin luckily called Batman out of it. But yeah, they were looking to crush them in there. And luckily enough, Batman got Shaggy and Scooby out of there in time for that. But still, they should have fucking said something.
If you see something, say something. Come on and party tonight.
That's not fair, because if either Shaggy or Scooby came to me and said that, one he's got every excuse and, you know, down in the hat there, so he would definitely be able to just be suggestive in the manner, like he's hypnotic like that, and Scooby would just sound fucking hilarious. I can't say no to Scooby sounding fucking hilarious.
Well, Robin decides, hey, you know what, I've got to get myself involved with this, and he just like blasts Fred.
Oh my god, he does. Holy shit. These guys, like, Batman and Robin are all over fucking Freddy in the Hood. They don't stop to think, why is this character dressed exactly like Fredward? They just kick the shit out of him right then and there.
Sometimes you gotta, though.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to save people, and other times you just got to find Fred Jones and just punch him right in the fucking kidney.
Come on and party tonight.
oh, but no. Nah. They are teenagers with the marijuana, and that is what they do.
Well, they had that, you know, they all regroup, and shucks, we couldn't find this man that we're chasing. Let's head back to the old lady's house. They get there, and not only is the house, but the Batmobile as well are both completely gone.
Okay, Batman fucking deserves it. Because before they got back there, there was a line that just, oh my god, dude, I almost turned the entire fucking world upside down. The woman had just gotten out of the fucking crane door the other side, just seconds before Batman got up there. Oh, the woman must have escaped out of there before putting the hood on me. Oh, well, I guess there's nothing else we could do. You're not fucking Batman or anything. You can't just hop through the fucking doorway, spot where she is, and plot a course and just fucking gun it for her or anything. You clearly haven't done that before, Batman. Have you ever done that before, Batman? Have you ever brought down somebody running away from you, Batman? Batman? Oh, man, that was a clear fucking bother there. What lazy bullshit is that? No wonder they wanted to completely can Batman back then. That was just fucking terrible.
Batman, don't run, bitch.
Batman, maybe later. The lazy cut.
Well, yet again, the kids are like, hey, Batman, we'll drive you back to the Batcave. But this time, he's like, no, no, you can't just, you know, go to the Batcave. And Daphne's all about getting blindfolded here.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, on the last episode of Dragon Ball Z, they still went to the Batcave anyway, but they just stuck around on the outside of it, as if going down one straight goddamn pathway is going to make any lick of fucking difference, blindfold or no.
Yeah, it's almost like these two episodes' orders should have been flipped here.
You know what Fred does for anywhere between like 3-5% of the Scooby-Doo episodes? He fucking drives. What makes you think he couldn't trace it back, even if his fucking eyes were completely covered, because he would still remember the motions going and shit. Front and back, especially with something this intense, I wouldn't fucking forget it. It'd be wild.
Well, yeah, Daphne's all excited about being blindfolded, and they ask if there's any snacks back in the Batcave for Scooby and Fred, or Scooby and Shaggy, sorry. Oh yeah, there's bat milk and cookies for everyone.
Shaggy legit questions the bat milk part. I would definitely question the bat milk part, because that's how he started it, was bat milk. So I assume that, hold on, Shaggy, I'll get you something fresh to squeeze. And then he'll reach into a crevice, pull out like an adult bat, and just kind of ring it out gently. It'll squeak, but it'll squirt out bat milk off the bottom of it. I don't care what the fuck it is. It just squirts it into a glass. He's like, I'm sorry if you don't like pulp, but it's all I have at the moment.
And the look on Shaggy's face when it
wasn't as Shaggy said that milk, I too looked up from my writing and said it simultaneously with him.
Oh my god. Oh, it was just absolutely hilarious. The fucking bat snacks all throughout both episodes, they look like fucking rocks. So the entire time, Batman's like, here, have some bat cookies. He just throws down a pile of rocks for Scooby to eat. But he's a Hanna-Barbera drawing, so he doesn't give a shit what goes in his stomach.
Am I a Hanna-Barbera drawing?
Yeah.
Did you finish your Brussels sprout?
I had spinach.
All right. You can have one half an hour of Hanna-Barbera animation time.
Sweet fucking stomach.
You ought to learn from his example, Shauna. Always doing rebellious things, watching MTV after 9:30 p.m. Shame.
Well, they all get to the Batcave, and it's within minutes that Batman's like, yeah, the car's got a GPS. We lose it all the time, and just finds it.
And that he has to go home to use the GPS. He doesn't, I guess he doesn't have the wireless capability to follow his shit. Even though in his cave he has the wireless capability to follow his shit.
And like, no Alfred either.
No Alfred, and a seemingly lot of confusion in regards to just his neck coloring, because you often see that it's like the same color as his flesh and shit, but other times it's filled in with the blue and jazz, and it's kind of weird every now and again just to see it. You know, you're like, oh, cool, the Adam West costume. And they're like, and then you're like, ah, shit, the fucking Super Friends costume.
Did you see the screenshot that I posted from later on in the film?
Oh my God, I fucking love it. I fucking saved it too. I love it.
I don't know why he's wearing, why there's no glove and he's wearing a ring.
It's fucking bad.
Kind of. No, it's an animation glitch.
Okay.
Just for like a quick second, he's wearing a bat ring. It's not even the shape of a bat. It's just a big gold pimp ring.
Yeah, as I honestly thought we were about to get that meme in that manner of animation. Just that one fell swoop arm swing.
Daphne says one thing too much.
Daphne does one thing too much. Even if it's nothing.
Well, we cut back over to Joker and Penguin because, you know, it's blindfolds on, time to go find the car. And, you know, Penguin's just sitting there fisting the punchy clown full of money.
Yeah, he's just jamming his arm up his hole. Stuffing him.
Like, yeah, I did not appreciate this innuendo. Or in that endo.
Is it because the bird's gay?
No, it's because the fistful of money.
So he's stuffing birds with fistfuls of money. Are you upset
Sir, he's stuffing the clown.
He's stuffing the clown. Oh, that's even worse. Oh my God, there's a clown there. He's... Oh Lord, I need to sit down. Oh, that's a doozy. The fucking Martian thing just got like rivaled out there. It's a fucking WrestleMania match on which one just hurts my ass even more.
Yeah, Penguin's just grabbing fistfuls of counterfeit money and stuffing this clown in front of Joker. Like, just fisting it.
Absolutely. They're, I don't know what manner of inclusion they have in regards to this. You know, could they have been the fellas that were dropping off the case in the middle of the woods to that farmhouse? What were they all about? Who knows?
Well, they get to the carnival and... Scooby's like, yeah, I'm not helping you. So Daphne's like, well, what about for a Scooby snack? Fuck no. What about two Scooby snacks? No. Three? And that's the magic. We're giving Scooby-Doo three edibles, folks.
They gave the dog three more. Daphne gave the dog more fucking edibles. This is why her name for me is Idiot. She is just so much. Oh my God. Jesus. She is just something else, man. The fucking Daphne is absolutely wild in this feature.
And you can tell the minute they kick in, because Shaggy asked the dog, How come I'm the human here, but you're getting all the snacks?
Yeah, it reminds me of that meme from We're the Millers, the one kid, you know, you guys are getting paid and it's just Shaggy. You're getting Scooby snacks?
Yeah, Scooby just gives him the greatest little grin and taps on his head like, I'm the smart one.
Oh my god, we're fucking mutants. Oh my lord. So they're looking about, and Shaggy and Scooby in the car just goofing off, pretending they're Batman and Robin at the wheel. You know, they were allowed to stay with it just so long as they didn't do anything, you know, instrumental. Or touch anything instrumental, I think he said.
So, don't touch the instruments.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. He is giving children further scorn for touching his bat stuff or doing bat stuff without his permission. But Scooby's allowed to turn the wheel. It's not going to do any harm. He's pretending he's Batman, and he gets the fun little blue painted mask thing set up. And all of a sudden, the Joker and the Penguin appear by Shaggy's gaze in the fucking window. Like, just out of the blue. They're both poking their heads out, and they're both just fucking staring at them. Just watching them play Batman in the Batmobile. Like, should we tell them we're here? And they just continued watching for, like, 20 minutes.
Yeah, no, this is all taking place at the Gotham Amusement Park. So, Amusement Mile. Why does Amusement Mile, Joker's known hangout, have a Batman and Robin museum?
Well, this is still the Gotham City Amusement Park before it became the Amusement Mile thing for the Joker's hideout and shit, like official hideout and shit. So when they had that going on there, of course, it was just a regular fair, but there was a Batman and Robin exhibit in there because, you know, they're the heroes. I guess they gotta have a Batman and Robin exhibit.
Yeah, just in retrospect, it kind of threw me off and I thought it was funny.
It honestly makes a lot of sense, you know, because even then they're like, wait, if that's the Joker's hideout, why is there, even still, it raises the question back then. But if all he did was take over the amusement park, then, well, I don't really know or can't say what changes he would have actually made, given up until the updated look that we know and love.
Well, it does find out that Joker's in control of the buttons in the haunted house that's attached to the Batman Museum.
Did you see how Joker hid once everybody came along and saw him? How Penguin and Joker just ducked behind the window? And then Joker was still giggling like, now they can't see us. They don't know where the fuck we are. And the gang just stood like, well, gang, they just ducked behind the window now. Don't know where the fuck they are. It was so fucking hilarious. It was adorable, Joker, to do that because it reminds me of like cheeky new age Peter Griffin where he does just like the childish shit. And, I think it's absolutely hilarious. But yeah, they all head on in there. Joker and Penguin, they've got pretty much control of like the house's layabout, and it's a shenanigans.
And with that, we're going to take our last commercial break because there's not actually much left in this.
Yeah.
And we will be right back.
Go on. Back at it again further on with the reviews, of course. And we just got the gang into the fun house, which the Joker and the Penguin are operating. One, of course, in which Batman and Robin said, hey, just leave this to the professionals. No need to get yourself in danger. And the very same duo is ziplining up to the window to chase down their foes in a snap. They decide to go to the door through every single goofy ass booby trap the fun house has to offer. But why did they want to can Batman, though? Just absolutely.
Yeah, Batman and Robin really start falling into the idiot category during all this as well.
Yeah, it's he tries using like audio features and gags to scare them out of the funhouse there. It's not working. Batman's just like, you're fucking kidding me. Just turned on the ride. What kind of goofy shit is this? So they go about, they've managed to come across a locked door. And Joker, with the button still on, after yelling at the Batman through the same microphone, says to Penguin, yeah, check this out. Watch how I'm really going to lure him into this trap so the Batman can fucking hear him. And he says, oh, Batman, I'm behind this door. I bet you can't get to me. And Batman and Robin are like, well, that was an ominous voice that we clearly didn't hear just now. Let's just barge into this door and fall down into the pit where we await, you know, a soft landing, but an entrapping that we can't escape from whatsoever.
Well, not only that, when they burst down the door, Batman bursts down the door and flies in. Robin jumps in after him.
Yeah, that was a totally, like, bitch move. I like that you pointed that out there, because that's bullshit. Robin, we're both going to lug down the door, not me, and then you just follow behind like you're doing something. You know who doesn't do that?
Jaro?
And Jaro. Neither of them do that. Jaro does telepathic shit that's helpful for everybody. He is a cool fucking guy overall. Hey. And there's fucking Damian Wayne. The best Robin. The most powerful Robin. The most royalty of Robin. And the one that didn't get completely beat to death by a crowbar Robin.
Or forgotten about.
Or forgotten about. God. Just for no reason. All right, so they're all the way down there. Batman and Robin have been far too long at that point. So the gang decides to go in and search after him. Shag and Scoob wanted to stay outside again or some shit like that. They had a little bit of a bit getting them into the house eventually. So they're, of course, watching over the splitting up of Shaggy and Scooby and Fred, Velma, and Idiot. And it becomes just a, you know, an occasional Scooby-Doo episode only run by apparently competent super criminals. That their big master plan, their means of destroying their adversary is just turning the lights on at the funhouse.
Yeah, we're going to flick some belt.
Oh my god, it was absolutely hilarious. It's like, oh, it's just a sheet hanging off a wall. Don't you think maybe from that point they would have realized, okay, everything else they throw at us is just basically part of the funhouse and we shouldn't be scared of it. But it just gets the better of them. Shag and Scoob end up getting to a moving floor setup. They end up trying to go through the exit and shit, and they wind up like going down some slide bit. And then there's Fred, Velma, Idiot. They just they split themselves up, getting scared of just some dumb shit. And Velma goes off on her own, and poor thing, I don't know where she ran off to, but it can't be dangerous. It can't be not dangerous. Wow, it can't be all that safe for someone like Velma.
Well, she does meet up with Scooby-Doo and asks him why he's wearing that blanket.
It makes absolute sense, because when Shaggy and Scooby got down to their thing and they started going through all various passages, everybody was like intertwining and shit, and the Joker and Penguin thought they were getting the better of them on that. And they thought that, well, you know what, since they're all back together, there's one last thing we could try. Let's dress up as skeletons with two obviously different figures and run after these people who definitely know we're not skeletons but are not using their numbers advantage, just running away from us.
I got it, see? We'll run after him, see? And we'll wiggle our arms up in the air going boogie, 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 boo.
And surely that will scare off those peering proprietors. Those pilfer of knowledge. Jesus Christ, I was just getting dizzy with all the various uses of the English language that these Golden Age Batman villains were still using.
Well, the Scooby Snacks really kicked in because they look at them and go, so those are two people dressed up as skeletons. Those aren't real, right? Right. But on the off chance they are real, we're still going to run away.
And Scooby starts thinking on the off chance that they're real. Like, I just thought that was fucking dumb of Velma. I think she contracted secondhand Daphne from that. It was just completely awful. They could have been like, oh, hold on, Fred, why don't we just rush the fuckers? Like, we just gang up on people anyway, and plus we got, like, a Great Dane with us. What the fuck? And Scooby-Doo...
A fat guy, let's get him.
Yeah, Scooby-Doo even realizes, oh, shit, I'm a fucking dog, and these guys are made of bones? What? Oh, man, sometimes I forget myself. And he starts chasing them, and I thought that was badass, because he finally decided to use his size and aggression against opponents like that, especially unarmed ones who cannot defend themselves against a dog like that on their own. They're just psychotic men out of Gotham. There's nothing superhuman or like ultra crafty about these Golden Age villains.
Well, it turns out all in all, Joker and Penguin, this was really their only involvement with the scheme. Someone just kind of called them and said, hey, you want millions of dollars in counterfeit cash?
Just give me like a less of a fraction of that in real money and I'll deliver to you like millions of turtleneck fun bucks. And in which case, they apparently didn't notice the turtleneck part on it. So clearly, there's a little Daphne in all of them.
Even if they do, they can use those at the amusement park as amusement park dollars.
What was really cool about the two being chased there was that they fell in the pit with Batman and Robin, and by the time they unmasked them and ended the whole thing, Batman came up with a really crafty line there, the one where he says he went from the crown, the clown prince of crime, to the crown prince of climb. And it was just a fancy little shift up with the letters, and I thought it was adorable.
Well, they decide, you know, the kids and the dynamic duo, let's go back to that abandoned spot in the field and see what's going on there. And lo and behold, the creepy old lady's house is back.
Yeah. Of course, they got the Batmobile back and everything. They're doing a whole lot improper. They're on their way back that way. They got to figure shit out. And, it is just, I wouldn't know what to think either. You know, this house just disappears and reappears. And the method they did that was absolutely genius. Fucking Shaggy and Scooby decided to stay behind and watch the cars because they didn't want to fuck around in a house that could disappear on a moment's notice. And I can't honestly blame them for that one.
Yeah, even Batman looks at them and goes, that's a pretty good idea.
Because what if there is a means that can be done from this side? All we need is, you know, somebody to let somebody know, and the development on that can begin and return us home kind of shit. Should there be anything actually supernatural about the scenario for any reason?
And plus, Scooby's sitting there probably still tripping balls on his three edibles.
Yeah, because he got scared by a motherfucking rabbit or some shit like that, and he jumped up onto the fucking branch. And when he sank the branch down, all of a sudden, the house turned upside down and revealed a little spot of land and trees on it. But all the people that weren't there with them were inside the house. Batman and Robin went through the front, and Fred, Idiot, and Velma went into the back, and they were looking to, you know, try and, you know, cut people off on the stairs so that way this person, this culprit, wouldn't be able to escape. Batman and Robin spilled out when they were underground there, and they just had to look around to see that there was like various passageways as well as a lever down there that would also control the motion of the farmhouse from underground. So all he would do is hit the switch there, and the house rotated all the way back up, in which case people are, you know, trying to adjust their footing, stand on the ceiling, and not completely tumble over every time the house moved.
Completely forgetting that there's at least three other people in the house, Robin starts playing a game of Switch War unknowingly with Shaggy on topside.
Good gosh, that is true.
Man, imagine being three mystery kids and how badly they're going to be vomiting.
Oh my god. Thank God Scooby isn't in there, man. He would be going ballistic.
Especially all those Scooby snacks.
His trip would be just absolutely fucking wild. So they all get back down there once again after the thing got turned the right way up. And from there, Fred, Velma and Idiot managed to get out of there, and they conferred with Batman and Robin. Same as the Scooby and Shaggy, they managed to get down there and you know, hook up with everybody. That was a pretty wild ride to see all that house action.
Yeah, now, you know, the obvious granny runs by again, and oh, there's the man that we're chasing.
Yeah, they found a little hatchway to get in there, and that was a pretty clever ways to get where they need to go, which was apparently into just a like a toy factory warehouse thing.
Yeah, where there's a giant like wind up toy dog that obvious granny winds up and starts barking. And Daphne looks behind her and goes, shut up, Scooby. Pretty much says, shut the hell up, Scooby-Doo. And ties his mouth shut.
Like, what a dirtbag. What a piece of shit. Just tying the dog's mouth shut instead of, you know, letting him explain it's not me. It was something else that barked.
Are you saying after all this time, you don't know your own dog's bark?
You don't know the sound of his attempt of, you know, speaking the English language that he seems to know all this time?
Just note, there's a random dog barking. Let's muzzle this one.
Absolutely. Like, how is it? Fred can, on a Golden Age Batman level, think of various scenarios and solutions as to where certain hypotheses will go in regards to the mysteries. Velma has that sciencey smarts, just that kind of bookworm smarts as well. She's overall intelligent. Even Shaggy just has, like, kind of spur-of-the-moment Kramer-like intelligence, and it's fucking uncanny. And Scooby-Doo is just bad. Scooby-Doo is just basically the Golden Age version of Courage the Cowardly Dog. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. I'm all for it. But fucking death, Jesus Christ. If there was an embodiment to express, you know, wanting to push something down the stairs, it's Daphne.
See, I've always believed the van was Shaggy's.
That would make a, I guess that would make a lot of sense, you know?
No matter how much he fucks up, no matter how high he gets and almost screws up on everything, they can't kick him out because it's his car. Because Shaggy's too high. He's too high. Fred's always driving.
And he's always eating with Scooby-Doo, in which case it's only a small thing to ask. Fine, but you know, but if that be the case and I come along with the van and shit, somebody else is driving so I can keep fucking smoking and munching out and shit. And
yeah.
Just like, yo, I just learned to drive and shit. I love fucking driving. And he just stuck with it the whole time because he likes the feel of the mystery mobile.
And then Fred and Velma are the ones that are actually there to solve mysteries. And Daphne's just kind of Fred's side piece.
Oh, Daphne knows word jumbles. Good for fucking you, Daphne. You know what? I'm gonna give it that. That's a different universe, Daphne. This specific Daphne. Oh my god! Just straight fucking field goal kick.
Yeah, that's my theory on how that gang all stays together.
It works. It matches up to their various personalities and everything. So,
Various toy hijinks.
It was absolutely adorable to see both the Cape Crusaders as well as the Scooby Gang be involved in one giant clusterfuck of Scooby-Doo hijinks. Just overall oopses, various funny moments, crazy feats of acrobatics that nobody meant to do whatsoever, and the amount of fucking overall excitement these stoners have had is just probably rocking their shit. So they do like a numerous amount of hilarious things, such as like bouncing around on various shit after being dropped down. They ran from a smiley ball. Like, all somebody did was throw a ball at them and they fucking booked it. And I thought that was just fucking, yeah. Good God. Like, this, it's clearly Mrs. fucking Baker under there. All she did was just bounce a ball towards them on the ground. And these kids are so fucking cooked. They saw a smiley face on it and thought it was Satan trying to kill them. Like, holy cow. This is drug trip the movie. This is what Harold and Kumar would see on acid when they go to White Castle.
During this as well, you know, Shaggy bumps Granny into a teepee.
Oh, yeah, he's got the giant elephant head on. Scooby-Doo was hiding out on a gingerbread house and then got knocked onto this toy car that just kept spinning around. So Scooby-Doo the entire time is spinning at a high speed in just fucking circles all over the floor of this warehouse environment, which is absolutely hilarious because he bumps into all manner of things and it all works out in the long run for him. But aside from that, there was a nice little trapeze act in the middle of all the shenanigans that just touched base down on Robin's sister. I thought that was just kind of a nice nod towards Dick Grayson there. Involved in a Scooby-Doo episode of that.
Yeah, this is also where we got my infamous Kiss the Bat-Ren Bitch.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Because they were chilling out watching everything, and then Batman's hand came up, and it had no glove on it, and he was wearing a ring. He's like, Robin, what are the two rules of being part of the Bat family? Don't touch the Bat gadgets unless you're told, and kiss the ring, Robin. Fine. When do I get my own ring? When you're old enough, chum.
Where do you think Alfred went? He didn't kiss the ring.
That's why they don't have Alfred. They eventually replaced Alfred, just still calling him Alfred. And each different rendition of Alfred is because the previous Alfred didn't do as he was told.
And they use Aunt Harriet as an example of someone they didn't replace.
That's fucking scary. Are we really sure that Bruce Wayne isn't a fucking killer? And he's convinced Dick that it's a matter of justice.
Well, Bruce Wayne does belong in Arkham Asylum.
Hands down. Like, he ever gets caught for his acts for Batman, that's definitely the one place you gotta put him. There was a thing on that in The Last Night on Earth, too. Fantastic book that told that same story and then wound up putting him in that same environment. It's messed up. Oh, that's another one I would like them to do, too. The Last Night on Earth.
Well, this is when they chase the man down and they're able to get his mask off. And holy shit, Mize, it's not a man at all. It's Mrs. Baker.
Mrs. Baker, kind old Mrs. Baker, in the outfit that was clearly different to the one that she's currently wearing right now, only with a hood covering her face the entire time. The same Mrs. Baker that didn't hear the same people who came in and dropped off the delivery she clearly fucking knew about.
Like, she had a worse disguise than Oliver Queen in season one of Arrow.
And you know what hurts even more about that is that they fell for it. Holy crap. Even Velma on her worst day, you know, she's just like, you know what, this is a crossover. I'm just going to give them the spotlight on this. I'm sure somebody's going to figure it out. Let's get a chill back and smoke for a few scenes.
That's basically it. They have their big speech and then they cut to the credits.
Yeah, it was fucking hilarious that she got caught like as a three-pointer catapult launch. More Hanna-Barbera like shenanigans, of course. Catching her unveiling that she was the brains behind the whole fucking counterfeiting scheme. And they have like this bag to say thank you to the Scooby Gang with, filled with bat snacks or some shit like that. And he just unloads a bag of rocks in front of Scooby-Doo. And Scooby-Doo's like, as long as you say they're bat in front of it, I'll believe it's food. And he just eats the bat rocks. It could be guano. He could be feeding him fucking guano.
And it's a lot of snacks to feed the dog at once, too. Like, he dumps an entire burlap sack out for him.
What if he went up to them and he's like, yo, you think your edibles are fucking good? This shit here, the bat snack, is enough to take down a fucking killer croc with just two. And Scooby-Doo is just fucking scooping him in there. He's like, I'll see you bitches at Disneyland.
You know, between the shape and the colors, they look like mushrooms.
Oh, God. Scooby-Dooby-Doo, looking for you. Don't run off in the van again, please. I would love to see that illustrated or animated. Just Scooby-Doo's like Scooby snack or bat snack trip. And it's just the entire adventure of Scooby running off from something, but investigating other shit and doing like wild and colorful shenanigans with Shaggy.
Oh, so that wraps up the Scooby-Doo meets Batman two-parter.
Yep.
Overall, I would have switched the order that they went in on the DVD.
That way, at the very least, the whole, like, starting with the situation with the Batcave and shit, the concern for trust and jazz can be set aside and they can just be brought to the Batcave as they did in the first episode. It would have made more sense that way.
That and then at the end of what was our first episode, Batman and Robin have Joker and Penguin in custody. Not they have them in custody, and then the next time we see them, they're living at the amusement park.
I honestly think there was a couple of seconds that didn't make it into, like, the tape at the time, like, that cut of it. So they wound up just cutting out when they patted Joker and Penguin on the back, and they said, "All right, you two scamps, get out of here. Don't cause no more shit." I'm guessing that's how they recur the villains all that often. They just pretty much like tag your it, and then they move on to the next episode. It makes the most sense.
It does.
Oh, but yeah, that's the Scooby-Doo episode, and I gotta tell you, I'm nothing short of impressed at the lack of like logistics, the lack of realism, and somehow Daphne being just a little less smart than a bar stool.
And I think that's a pretty good way to sum up the review. Of course, this weekend is our 1-year anniversary show. We will be hyping it up for the rest of the week on our social medias. And speaking of those, Sean, am I doing yours for you? Or are you? She's laying on the couch and she don't care. And for now, she still has that blue hair. You can find her at SickSpaceHair on Twitter, at SickLittleOne on Instagram. And coming this weekend as well, she will be setting up, you know, we've been doing this show a year, and she's going to set us up a Twitter page.
Why the hell not, you know? Join up and follow us in the group fashion, you know? We'll see what's going down. We'll have an official thing going on from there. And there's a lot more goodness to come aside from social media jazz. So keep sticking with it. Tune in, dial up, tweet out, switch off, switch on. You know, we're the place to be.
You know, clap on, clap off the clapper.
Yeah, that's another
one. Yeah, find me on Twitter at ClownyJ. You can pick up my official t-shirt at whatamaneuver.net. Mize, where can the people find you?
Normally over here, sometimes over there. Maybe just a little to the left. Other times you can find me on Twitter at Mize1987 and One Man Mize on Instagram.
Perfect. Of course, shout out to Burton's Comics, 725 Barton Street, Hamilton, Ontario.
Got the good steps on the books. Got the goods for the cards, the figures. You know where you got to get your shit from when you're in Hamilton. You got to stop by the 725. Give them a hello. Give Bobby a hello. And pick up all your favorites from there. Aside from that, that's pretty much it from us at this point.
Perfect. Well, hey, I've got nothing more to say, so that probably means we should call it a day. We will see you good folks next time on the same pod time.
As usual, same pod channel.